Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm Jeff Howard, and I'm very happy because I am talking with Dwayne Anderson. Hey, Dwayne.
Hey, Jeff.
All right, so we just wrapped up an interview. The podcast before this one was a nice, we went long. I don't even know how long it was because we are on Zoom. Dwayne's in Utah. I'm in Los Angeles. So if you want to hear all about Dwayne and his remarkable film, 30 Meetings, 30 Days, and his feature, Super Powerless, which, hey, you can watch that one right now on YouTube. And if you search for 30 Meetings/30 Days, you can also probably see it on Amoletto, which is a channel on YouTube. So anyhow, listen to the podcast before this to learn all about Dwayne and his work. This podcast is a 4 questions, which means Dwayne is going to answer 3 favorite films, an underrated film, an overrated film, and a lesser known film that people should seek out. I will wait to pimp. And by the way, for those who can't see Dwayne on Zoom, which is everyone but me, he shook his head at the painful idea of, I think, probably just naming 3 favorites.
Yeah, I didn't really prepare as well as I should.
Ah, no worries. You're good. It's actually very intentional that it's 3 favorite films. It's not like the 3 best of all time, or there's three films you totally love. It doesn't even say your top 3, like just 3 favorites. Heck. And no pressure, but I totally expect you to name films I love, because as we've chatted often online, we seem to have similar tastes. Not that people need my taste.
The one thing I had prepared was the 3 films, but I kind of said the exact same thing in the original podcast, which was those 3 pillar films that I talked about. Those were the 3 I was going to mention.
Well, you should stick with it.
Okay. So,
but if you want to add a 4th and 5th, if you want to add a surprise me with some more.
The 3 films that I always kind of go back to are these films that I call my 3 pillar films. And those are the films that kind of influenced me the most as a filmmaker. The first was Silver Streak. Robert Hiller, is that his name? Hiller, director, but starring Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor and Jill Clayburgh. And I saw that movie when I was 9, and it was the movie that was my first sort of grown-up movie, and my first in the movie theater watching a grown-up movie experience with one of my best friends.
And I'll jump in. Arthur Hiller.
Arthur Hiller, that's it. Thank you.
Who, made a little film called Love Story.
Oh, my gosh. Arthur Hiller also directed The In-Laws, which is one.
Oh, The In-Laws is room. I saw that. My parents just took me to that when it came out when I was a little kid. I thought it was one of the greatest things I ever saw.
It's still one of the greatest things you've ever seen. It's so good. Anyway, but that movie really made me want to become a filmmaker. And ever since then, that's what I've been doing. Then a few years later, I saw Star Wars in the theaters with another one of my best friends, Josiah Paulhemus, who would eventually help me star, who would star in my film Super Powerless. And it was really written for him. And I just pity any human being who was born so late and is so now so young that they didn't get to their first experience with Star Wars wasn't in the theater without knowing what they were about to see.
With the original film.
Yeah. With the original, and not all these added things. Yeah.
That original version is just perfect.
What people don't realize is that when in The Empire Strikes Back, when we sat there in the theater and Darth Vader says, "No, Luke, I am your father." And he screams and he says, "No, that's not possible." No one in the theater was able to hear that scream because we were all screaming and saying, "No, that's not possible." You know? Because it was just, no one knew before watching it, except for my friend that I was just mentioning. Joe said that he was, in junior high school and somebody said, and it had come out and he said, "Oh, yeah, I'm going to see Empire Strikes Back tonight. I'm so excited." He goes, "Have you seen it?" He goes, "Yeah, Darth Vader's Luke's dad."
Oh, man, not to totally geek out. I don't want to geek out and make this the longest 4 questions podcast ever, but I'm still mad about that. I still think that was bad screenwriting, making Vader, his dad.
Really?
I'm very attached to that first film. And when Obi-Wan Kenobi says, Darth Vader murdered your dad, that it should have been a vengeance story to get the guy who murdered his dad. I'm still not happy with that. That I understand why they switched it on us, but I'm not. I won't accept it.
I have to admit that I, as much as I love Star Wars, I am only like mildly interested in anything other than the first movie.
I'm with you 1,000%. I think all the stuff that in the prequels that made me want to just shut my eyes and walk out of the theater, that stuff starts happening in Empire for me.
Yeah. 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 Me too. Yeah. For
but
sure.
But the first film, every time I said, by the way, I'm very lucky. I have a friend who has a Laserdisc player with the original theatrical version on Laserdisc. So even though you have to turn it over, I converted that. So I've actually been able to watch the original theatrical version still.
Well, I have it. I have a DVD release that came out with both versions.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
So I have it. And that's the only one I watch. But now it sort of doesn't quite fit in my widescreen TV anymore, you know, because it's an older DVD, but that's still the one I watch. Okay. And the third is when I was 16. And my friend, as I said in the other podcast, my friend who I went to see Silver Streak with, he won on the radio a couple passes to go see Fanny and Alexander, the West Coast premiere in San Francisco, which was it was a big deal. I don't know why it was there and not in LA, but it was a red carpet sort of event. And I walked in there completely unprepared. I didn't know who Ingmar Bergman was. I'd heard of him. And I'd never seen a film at that point that, you know, I'd seen artistic films, but I'd never seen a film that was like such truly, like clearly a work of art and clearly like literary in its sort of work of art. And I realized in each of the, I use those as my, is those three films. And they were the first things I thought of because those are really the three films that sort of brought me to a whole new understanding of cinema and what cinema could be. And really shaped my taste, I think, which is obviously fairly broad. You know, so one was purely for fun. One was just a technical achievement, also purely for fun. But that was what was so impressive about Star Wars was the technical achievement. And then one was just sort of this piece of art. And so you know, anyway, those are my three.
Excellent. Do you want to name any more or should we move on to?
Oh, there's so many. I mentioned Wings of Desire to you just the other day. Wim Wenders movie in the 80s. I love and still love. A huge fan of things just like Singing in the Rain. I love Chaplin. I'm a huge Marx Brothers fan. I've always been just a diehard Marx Brothers fan. And Marx Brothers have kind of disappeared. Like young people know Chaplin, but they don't know Marx Brothers so much anymore. And so that's sort of a loss. Maybe I'll use that for the other question you mentioned, where something people should watch it, look out for.
Sure, like yeah, I'm with you because yeah, Marx Brothers are. You know, it's funny. I'm just a doofus, and I almost see Marx Brothers as high art. Like it's not slapstick. It's so intelligent.
Yeah, so intelligent, and yet so crass, so silly and crass. Yeah. You know, a lot of it was pre-code. You know, so there's some real sort of kind of lowbrow, kind of a little bit kind of on the raunchier level.
Yeah, it's punk rock.
Yeah. And so it's really in a lot of it is, and that was all also their appeal. Their appeal, they've always appealed to kind of intellectuals. So what was the question that was like something that you.
Yeah. So the next one is a film that you feel is underrated.
Yeah. So let's just talk about that. I shouldn't, it's not like they're underrated. It's just, they're kind of been kind of forgotten about by the millennial generation, which generally has really, you know, great taste, but doesn't always recognize the shoulders upon which our current giants are standing on, you know? And I feel like for some reason, the Marx Brothers, when I was a kid, they were still kind of beloved, you know?
Yeah, for some reason, I mean, and I think the Three Stooges were hilarious, but for some reason, the Three Stooges stayed in the public consciousness in a way. Yeah, and there's been like films made about them and stuff. Yeah. I don't know if it's that the Marx Brothers family kind of doesn't want people playing them.
I don't know, but I have a script. I have a project. It's not a script, but I have a project specifically about Harpo. But that's for another conversation. I think duck soup, horse feathers. My wife and I just watched, Animal Crackers recently. And then into Day at the Races and Night at the Opera are two like just masterpieces. And after that, they get a little, they lose their way a bit. At the circus, I think has great moments. It certainly has the Lydia, the tattooed lady song, which is worth the whole movie. So let's just give a shout out for going back and watching old Marx Brothers movies.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, the third question is a film you think is overrated.
Yeah. I don't think I can say that. You said that other people have struggled with that one. I just being so connected to filmmakers, I feel like, you know, it's such a miracle to make a movie. It's so hard to make a movie. And I feel like everybody who makes one is putting in an effort, you know, and working.
Yeah, no, I have no problem with people skipping that one. I mean, I sometimes will give the little qualification, but don't feel the need to nibble on it. I will say that
I did have an experience. Normally, I just love going to movies. And I love going to movies so much that I just like movies, you know? And so I'm not very judgmental. I'm not very critical. One of my least favorite people on the planet are film critics. just because it's like, hey, it's a movie. Come on. It's better than doing just about anything else, right? Well, and so I just enjoy the experience so much I'm not very critical, but I was told when I was, you know, oh, everyone was singing the praises of Field of Dreams. And I remember going to Field of Dreams and thinking, I'm a huge baseball fan. I love Kevin Costner. I love J.D. Salinger, which is like referenced in it. I mean, there's all these like reasons why I should like this movie. All my friends were telling me I would like this movie. And I like Costner. And the reason why I didn't like it, I think, wasn't because I didn't like the movie, but because I thought it was I thought it should be a TV show. It's too episodic, you know? It's like, and then this happens, and then this happens, and this happens. And even as a person in my 20s, I felt this doesn't feel like a movie. It feels like a TV show. And I think it'd be still, I mean, I don't know why they haven't turned Field of Dreams into a TV show. I think it would be great. You know, every episode, there's somebody new coming in out of the corner, somebody else that they have to go like fulfill some dream for or something like that, you know?
For sure. And I was going to say, my qualification is sometimes it can be putting a film down, but it can be like, I actually really like a film. I just think that, like, for me, I'm a very big Coen Brothers fan, and I love a lot of their films. But honestly, like, one, so No Country for Old Men gets them Best Picture, and I'm like, wow, that's not even in my top five for Coen Brothers films. Mm-hmm. So I only call it overrated because it got an Oscar for Best Picture. It's a great film, but I'm just like, how come the Academy ignored all the ones I think are better? And the answer is because the Academy is full of crap. But you know, so the Academy
finally said we better give these guys an Oscar. What are your top five?
Number one is Miller's Crossing.
Brilliant.
which I think is just unbelievably flawless. Number, and then maybe go for some fun with Big Lebowski. And, oh, shit. I see. I've never been asked that for my top five. But, oh, then I'll slip in. I'm going to back off because I'm not even supposed to be answering. But yeah. But I'm a huge on
who's running this interview.
Raising Arizona. I mean, obviously, I guess I'm leaning a little more towards the earlier stuff, but I love. Actually, I really love that Netflix Western one that they released.
I never watched that. I never got around to watching it.
I can't. The Ballad of
Scrub or something.
Buster Scruggs or something. Scruggs, yeah. Oh my god! I thought it was so freaking great. Yeah. I obviously love Fargo. I love a lot of it, but I love when they. What can I say? I love when they're very Coen-y.
Yeah, I think my personal favorite is Barton Fink.
Barton Fink is pretty wonderful.
Yeah. Anyway, okay. Sorry to hijack.
No worries. Only one question left, and I feel like you're prepped for it, but that's the lesser known that people should seek out.
Yeah, I was thinking of that. I was thinking about there's just too many, right? That could have been a Marx Brothers one too, right? That could have been, those questions are sort of similar. But I'm gonna give a shout out to Jeff Lefkowitz, who is my friend who edited 30 Meetings, 30 Days, and is a brilliant filmmaker. He's made several very interesting, he's done two different things, very small micro budget movies, such as a feature called Engagement, which he shot with a cast of two in a single location. And that's a, but he makes these very small movies. Then he's also done these movies such as, he did a movie about the editor Walter Murch called Sight and Sound, the cinema of Walter Murch, where he just took all of these films that are of interviews of Walter Murch, put them together and edited this brilliant essay. It's like an hour and a 15 minutes long essay about Walter Murch using all this cinema as sort of supporting stuff. And he's just a brilliant editor and a really clever filmmaker. He has this film called Rubber Soul, which is where he took an interview of John Lennon for Rolling Stone in 1970, and then an interview of him for Playboy. I think it's the other Playboy was in 70, 80. In 80, it was Rolling Stone. And they, he shot these interviews with the actors and edited it together. And it's a movie that he can't release because he doesn't own the rights to the interviews and they didn't give him permission to do it. It played at festivals, but it just can't be. So he does these films like the Walter Murch movie did without any permission at all from Walter Murch or from any of the places where he's getting these movies. But he's just doing movies out of like passion and love and curiosity. And that's the sort of like thinking that really excites me. Plus, he's such a brilliant editor that these films are always so engaging. You think a movie, an hour and a half movie of John Lennon talking to somebody, of an actor playing John Lennon talking to somebody would not be very interesting, but it's riveting, you know. So Jeff Lefkowitz, and he's posting, like me, he's posting his movies on YouTube as well as on Vimeo for free. And so you can watch on Sight and Sound, the Walter Murch movie for free on Vimeo. And it's really, they're all just really amazing. So.
Is Rubber Soul not on YouTube or anything?
I don't think he has Rubber Soul available.
Well, because I know you, can I get a link or something? Because I got to tell you, I actually am, when I talk about movies, I should always acknowledge that when I was 5 years old, I saw the Beatles' Yellow Submarine. And Beatles have been number one for me ever since, starting at age five. And I would love to see that. Oh, my God. Yeah,
well, here's what we'll do is you'll release this and you'll send me a link to it and I'll send it to him. And then he can let me know.
And he can let you know if he'd like to let a Beatles fanatic who's a film fanatic.
Yeah, I remember. I mean, I showed it to students recently and he he shared it with them. And so I don't remember what his protocol is for it. But it's brilliant. It's a brilliant movie. And he's a great editor. He edited a documentary that I was brought on to help be a director for, and wrote me a nice note about my shooting, that it was easy to edit. and then I started following him. And he also does these mashups, which are really worth watching. They're just these, like, he'll get a, like, he did one recently about family, and it's just like a 3-minute musical mashup of clips from movies that all have to do with family, or all have to do, there's one that's just about people doing things at the same time, like looking at each other at the same time, or drinking a cup at the same time, or dancing at the same time, and put them all together. And he's just so, like, incredibly clever and inventive that he could spend, like, a long time on his sites just kind of watching cool stuff.
That's so cool. It just popped in my head. I remember a long time ago in the early 90s when the MTV Music Awards kind of felt like the cool corollary to the Oscars.
Right.
And they had a fake category. You didn't know it was fake at first, but they said, and now the award for best awkward pause, here are the nominees. And they showed 5 clips where two actors were in a scene, not speaking, looking at each other awkwardly. And they showed all 5 clips. And then whoever the announcer was said, and the winner is?
Uh-huh.
And then it walked off, and I thought, wow.
It's similar. It's similar.
John Lefkowitz. All right.
John Lefkowitz.
Kovitz, yeah, with a V. And they can, and heck, someone listening to this, all they got to do is go to Dwayne Anderson with an E at the end, Anderson, not Anderson, and just look at the editor of 30 Meetings, 30 Days, and they can.
Yeah, or Google John Lefkowitz on YouTube or Vimeo, and you'll see what you're looking for.
Some cool shit.
Yeah, for sure.
How great is it that I got to say it's pretty wonderful. 20 years ago, someone doing cool things at home didn't have a way to share it with the world.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's true.
Yeah. We live in a cool time, even if social media may have ruined everything else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe the internet's ruined our lives, but yeah.
There's some definite perks. And I've been kind of doing that too with the release of my own stuff, just, you know, saying, let's just get this out there.
It works. All right. Well, hey, excellent. Boy, my apologies to anyone who likes a focused 4 questions, because I think we kind of chatted our way through it, and but people could pick up. Certainly, people got to jump into the Marx Brothers, Fanny and Alexander, Star Wars, Silver Streak, good shit. Make me want to watch Silver Streak again. I'll always remember first time I saw that.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
But I probably saw it on TV with commercials when I think about
probably.
It.
Yeah.
But I always thought Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor were like the best pairing.
What was really fun about that too is the kid I went with was black. And so it's a white kid and black kid watching Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor. I was just like, man, my life's going to be awesome. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the great things. Well, I'm just going to trumpet our home state that growing up in California and living in multi-ethnic communities is just it's a better way to grow up than in a homogenous place.
Yeah. I raised my kids in Utah, so.
Oh. Fair enough. Utah is not exactly multicultural, but hey, it's getting there, right?
It's getting there.
Yeah. Obviously. Well, anyway. We don't have to discuss Utah. I'll get us out of here. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the Discover Indie Film podcast. You got to hear Dwayne Anderson answer the Discover Indie Film 4 questions. You should absolutely check out his work. I didn't say this in the first one. I just named @DwayneMakesMovies, but it'll be a clickable link in the show notes. You can just like click on @DwayneMakesMovies. to go to either your YouTube or to your Instagram or whatever. So those will be clickable links in the show notes.
Yeah.
And if you want to learn more about this podcast or the TV series that was born out of it, all you got to do is go to @DIFWINS. I bet I forgot that last part. I did. I'm a little rusty. I forgot to say it's @DIFWINS. This podcast originally was called Discover Film. And then one of the people on it a couple months later said, I was just invited to the Discover Film Awards in London. And I was like, oh, no one was using it for a podcast, but I realized, oh, let's throw indie in there. And then we had a poll of like the first 30 people on the podcast. So what should we change to for the Instagram and Facebook and all that? And @DIFWINS won. So anyway, DIF for Discover Indie Film, WINS because it won. That you can learn all about this. Please like and subscribe to the podcast. Go to Amazon Prime Video and start typing Discover Indie Film. I think right around the I, it auto completes. There's a Discover India and Discover Indie Film. So I bet you should watch Discover India too. India is a fascinating country. But also watch all the indie films that are in the Discover Indie Film TV series. And if you want to learn more about that, the website is discoverindiefilm.com. I mentioned at the top that 30 meetings, 30 days won 6 awards at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. We hold that every November. So just go to shermanoaksff.com or @shermanoaksff on social media. Its sister festival that we hold every June is Film Invasion Los Angeles. You can learn about that if you go to filminvasionla.com or it's @filminvasionla on social media. And the last thing I do to mention is if you go to watchtvhi.com, that's watchtvhi.com. That is a new smart TV app, which is the same thing as a streaming service. You can literally have your TV High icon right next to your Netflix icon, and TV High is all indie content that is great to watch stoned. Although maybe I shouldn't say indie content because I just I got a task to do. I've found out about all the great public domain stuff. Fritz Lang's Metropolis became public domain on January 1st, and I'm like, oh shit, that means we can put Metropolis on TV High. Someone just has to bother downloading it. But anyway, why'd I put that at the end of your podcast? I should shut the fuck up. Let's get out of here. I named everything I should. And thank you, Dwayne.
Thank you, Jeff.
And thank you, everybody, for listening. Yeah.